Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
He was very, loving and caring of family and stuff like that.
I don't think that he's just somewhere living his life, ignoring us. I called his phone the other day just because I wanted to see if it was still on or whatever, and somebody answered it. And it honestly really freaked me out at first, and I was kind of offended until she told me that she had just got this phone number, and I had to apologize to her, but it was a strange experience. I hadn't called in a while. I used to all the time, and I used to leave voicemails and stuff just in case he was alive and listened or whatever. But when the girl answered, I honestly was really shocked, and I was like, why do you have this phone? And she's like, well, I just got this phone number. And I'm like, well, I don't really know what to say. I didn't know if I believed her, honestly.
One of the hardest things is trying to get the answers, but everything is so delayed and backed up that it's just hard to get any answers.
On February 9th, 2020, 31-year-old Zach Fortenberry left the home he shared with roommates in Bonnie Lake, Washington. Several days later, his car was located in nearby Carbonado, with the keys inside and half a tank of gas. The car was parked near a bridge that spans the rushing Carbon River underneath it, but Zach was nowhere to be found. With no clues or leads as to what had happened, Zach appeared to vanish into thin air that day, and no one has seen or heard from him since. Shady characters, odd clues, and a deep history prior to his disappearance have left Zach's family members struggling to find answers. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 268 of The Vanished, Zach Fortenberry's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. When Zach Fortenberry disappeared in February 2020, he was living in Bonnie Lake, Washington with roommates, who were the first to realize that something wasn't right. Zach's sister Devin spoke to us, and she told us how she found out that Zach was missing several days after he was last seen on February 9th, 2020.
So I'm at work, and I get a message from his roommate Joey's kid's mom, and she was asking me basically if I had heard from Zach, and I was like, I mean, no, not really. I haven't really talked to him. Like, what's going on? And she was like, well, he had left last night to go do something. Like, go do laundry or I think, like, something like that. He was going to the laundromat. He, like, had never came home. It was, and she said that was weird. She said he sometimes leaves for, like, short periods of time, but he never really was gone that long. So I kind of thought it was weird. So I was trying to call him, and I was doing this, and, you know, asked my mom, asked his dad, asked his sister when the last time they'd talked to him. It had all been a few days for everyone, because, like I said, at this point, it was the 11th, and he had left on the 9th. And I was like, well, I guess it's been enough time to make a police report. And so that's when I did that. And from there, everything just, nothing really changed. You know, he went missing. We called missing. And the only thing that ever occurred after that was we found his car and never another thing. Nothing else.
Zach has another sister, Chloe, who also spoke to us about Zach. And she told us about some of the confusion and miscommunication that occurred when Zach disappeared.
We actually were not called about it until the Thursday. So his other sister, she actually called me and she said, do you or your dad know where Zachary is? And I told her no, but, you know, I'll go ask my dad when the last time he talked to my dad. And him had phone calls about once or twice a week together. So I had gone out. I asked my dad when the last time he talked to my brother was. And, you know, he said that he called on, I think, the Saturday, so the 8th. And my dad said he was going to call him back on that Monday. So she explained that basically Joey had called and said that he had been gone since the 9th. And, you know, we're kind of like, well, why didn't you call sooner? But I guess it wasn't out of the ordinary for him to be gone overnight or for a couple days. And so then that's when we started the missing persons report, because he had been gone since the 9th.
Zach's family was confused and concerned that they hadn't learned he was missing for several days. But when we talked with his roommate's mom, Kim, she explained that it wasn't necessarily out of character for Zach to come and go as he chose.
He had been gone for a couple days, and I didn't think too much of it. And then I think on like the third day or something, that's when I went in the bathroom. I saw his dentures in it because he had his own bathroom. I thought, well, that's weird. And then I think we called his sister to see if he was over there. And she hadn't heard from him in a long time. And then that kind of got the ball rolling about calling all the relatives and everything. But until then, he left here like on a Sunday. And I think this was Wednesday or something. By the time we kind of figured out that, oh, he's not with anybody. He's not with his sister. He's not with his mom. He's not with his dad. He's not here.
When Zachary left, many of his important possessions were left behind. One of the most puzzling was his dentures. Zach had had all of his teeth removed and had dentures that he was careful to wear everywhere he went. But on the day he left his home, his dentures were left behind. Kim told us more about that.
He'd lost all of his teeth. He had his teeth pulled. Well, and I saw his teeth before they were pulled. So that was the damage that was done, you know, when he was younger, and he just couldn't, it was just too far gone. The teeth were really bad. They were just breaking on their own and stuff. And while he was here, he did have them all pulled and he had dentures put in. That damage was already done by the time he was late 20s, probably, maybe mid 20s. But yeah, he had false teeth because when he went missing, I wasn't too concerned because, you know, he would come and go. He wouldn't tell us what he was doing. I mean, he was an adult. But we hadn't seen him for a couple of days. And then when I went to the bathroom, his dentures were there. I thought, what the heck? What? That's weird. And that's when we kind of got concerned, was why would he be gone for so long without his dentures?
Zach's sister Devin told us that he would never leave without his dentures and that he was very self-conscious about wearing them any time he was outside of the house.
He only had one set that he didn't take with him when he left. Those were found in his room along with his wallet and EBT card. Like, his EBT card had been taken out separately out of the wallet.
Zachary was last seen on February 9th walking out of his residence. It was later reported that his car had been sitting on a bridge in Carbonado, Washington, about 15 miles from his home in Bonnie Lake. Witnesses told police that they had observed the vehicle there as early as February 9th, the same day Zach disappeared. But law enforcement did not respond to the scene until February 13th, when they received a call about a suspicious vehicle thought to be Zach's sitting on the Fairfax Bridge. That was also the day that his sister Chloe filed a missing persons report. Kim told us more.
Then his sister took over, and she called the police, I think. And then they started looking into it, and then that's when, maybe the next day or something, is when they found his car up on the bridge. So from what I hear anyway, maybe the next day or something after she called the police. So they were trying to figure out where he was. I think the police called me. And I said, I don't know. You know, he just left here. He didn't say where he was going. And that wasn't unusual. He never told me where he was going. Anyway, they found his car up on the Carbonado Bridge, which is this huge bridge, maybe about 45 minutes from here. Then some guy said he had talked to him that night. So it was Sunday when he left, maybe about 6 o'clock. And some guy had talked to him on the bridge. And I think that was the last guy that ever saw him or talked to him. And he was somebody that lived around there. And his car had gas in it. The keys were in it. It wasn't like he ran out of gas. He went for a drive and he ran out of gas. It was nothing unusual. You know, nobody said it was. It wasn't like he got into an accident. It wasn't crashed in or anything like that. So then I think the police, I'm trying to remember, police or sheriffs or something went looking, and then his family was looking for a few days out there. It's pretty rough terrain. It's very rough terrain, a very high bridge. And they were putting out signs and stuff like that, you know, missing person. And then I think his dad then eventually took the car to his house. And so that's what happened. You know, we just thought he was going to show up somewhere.
We also spoke to Zach's Aunt Heidi, and she explained to us where this bridge is located and what the surrounding area is like, so that we could get a better understanding of the circumstances in which the car had been abandoned.
So it's really rural. There's this cute little town before you come to this bridge, which is one of the highest bridges in, I think it's the highest bridges in Washington or something like that. It's just this really narrow bridge. And once you go past there, there's a few homes, and they're sort of like off the grid, but there's some homes back there. It's very heavily wooded, and there's, you know, lots of trails back there and hunters, and it's pretty popular, though. A lot of people go out there to go hiking and stuff like that.
Heidi says that the entire family was surprised to find Zach's car in this location, as it seemed very out of character for him for several reasons.
We were shocked, because he doesn't go anywhere. And then for him to be out there in his slippers and without his teeth, like that is, like he had dentures, you know? He was out there without all of that. And the fact that his roommate and his roommate's mom didn't, like, report him to us as not coming home, this is not like him, because he never went anywhere. And then when he did, he, like, wouldn't be gone all night. So I never saw him without his dentures. After he got them, he just would never, ever go anywhere without them.
After Zach disappeared, his family learned that a man claimed to have seen Zach sitting on the bridge in Carbonado, where his car would be found a few days later. This is the very strange story that Zach's mom, Nicole, shared with us about the man.
Zachary was seen on Sunday, February 9th, by a gentleman that lives on the bridge. The last person to see him alive and talk to him, which in my mind is a suspect or a person of interest, at the very least, that spoke to Zachary and didn't report anything that he saw his car for the next 4 days. The only way we knew his car was there is because the guy that was the last person to talk to him, he drives by at 8 something at night and sees my son sitting out there supposedly and says, just fucking jump. Just do it, man. Just fucking jump, and drives off. And I only know this because I went to this guy's house and talked to him. He says, oh, I felt bad. And so I went back and talked to him. He's like, hey, man, I was just having a bad day. I'm sorry. You know, I just see so many people out here, you know, contemplating suicide, whatever. Said that he talked to him and then he went back home. I mean, this guy literally is the first house you come to after you go over the bridge. And that's the only way in and out. And he works at this Rainier school, and it's for special needs kids, I guess you would say. And so he had to have drove past my son's car for days, just parked there on the bridge, and didn't report it to anybody. Here you see this person that you think is out there contemplating suicide. You leave him out there, and then you see his car for 4 days, and you don't think anything of it to say, hey, this is kind of unusual. I saw this guy out here, and his car is still here, but you don't see him for 4 days. When we're out there, find out that he's missing and that his car's found, we go out there. My entire family's out there, like, trudging the hills and along the river, and we go to his house. You know, we went to several houses around there and asked people. And this one guy says, yeah, I saw him Sunday about this time. He was out there looking at the full moon. And he ended up starting crying and saying, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry. The guy was literally crying. I'm like, this is weird. Granted, it's 11 o'clock in the morning and he's drinking a beer. But still, I was like, why are you apologizing to me? What are you apologizing for? That you didn't let law enforcement know? Did you do something to my child? Like, you feel bad for telling them to jump? It was really weird. So I called Pierce County and told them that they needed to go and talk to this guy. And they said, oh yeah, we went up there and talked to him. He wouldn't answer the door. So we called him, but he didn't tell us anything different than you told us. I'm like, that wasn't my point. I didn't want you to make sure, you know, he gave you the same story. Like, I wanted you to find out, you know, this is the last person that saw my son alive. There's got to be something else to be. I don't not want you to check my facts of what he said to me. Like, I don't want you to collaborate my story. I want you to probe him and find out, you know, what the heck. So I just was like, that was extremely frustrating.
This was a very strange aspect to Zachary's disappearance, and his family hoped that law enforcement would look further into this potential lead. But this wasn't the only odd part of Zachary's disappearance. He left his wallet and dentures at home, but took his keys, vape, and cell phone. His keys were found inside the car, between the seat and center console, but his phone and vape are still missing. This is what Nicole told us about the police involvement in searching for Zachary.
They are under the presumption that either A, he committed suicide, or B, he willingly left and is not wanting to be found, which I don't believe either is true. But so they're saying that they initially pinged his phone one time. The last ping was where his car was found. But after that, they said they couldn't without probable cause. They wouldn't try to contact his doctors, contact anybody, you know, like that, because they believe that he left and doesn't want to be found. So they're not willing to open anything with that.
Refusing to give up, Zachary's other sister, Chloe, explained to us how the family was doing everything they could to search for Zach on their own, since the police seemed to have made up their mind and closed the case.
After the whole car thing, we were trying to get them to bring people out to obviously search. And they said that, you know, they were very well suggesting suicide. I mean, they wouldn't let up on that suggestion, no matter what me, Devin, Nikki, anybody said about it. That was their conclusion. And so we said, well, where does the river lead out to if that's your conclusion? And they told us, I believe it led out to the Puyallup, a body of water in Puyallup. But they said that, oh, even if he, with how bad the rain had been and stuff like that, even with how fast the water is going, his body might have gotten stuck on a rock. So we were pushing our hardest, you know, can you send someone down the river, the search team, something, you know, to look if this is your conclusion. And they said the same thing. With how much rain we had gotten, the water was too dangerous. And I mean, they wouldn't even search like where the river came out to. To us, if you're going to kind of deem it a suicide or whatever, even if you thought, oh, his body got stuck on a rock, you could still search wherever the river came out to. It was kind of just like they didn't really want to do anything because they came to their conclusion of suicide. Even it got to the point where we were very desperate. We were looking for people that with search dogs, we had someone with a drone come out. You know, it got to the point where, okay, the police are not going to help us, so we're going to try and do this ourselves. But the only issue is that between the 9th and when we got word of what had happened, it had just been raining and pouring, and whatever evidence and stuff like that was gone, washed away. We had a guy come out that he, you know, his dog could find a scent up to months away, but the dog couldn't pick up anything. And so it kind of just got to the point where we were trying to pull people in. And I mean, even these people, when they heard the story, they're like, that's really messed up. Like, I mean, even for strangers to agree with us that why would they just deem it that just because it's a bridge? He did battle with severe depression and severe anxiety. That's kind of why Pierce County Sheriff's, they just deemed it a suicide because they found his car at the bridge. And when we had asked, you know, how many suicides happened at this bridge, they're like, they said not many, but it didn't make sense to any of us that it would have been a suicide just because, like our dad, my brother is afraid of heights and that bridge is very high up. I mean, probably 100+ feet in the air. And he's, I mean, just like our dad, he's deathly afraid of heights. And he doesn't like rushing water. And I mean, under that bridge is a rushing river and it's loud. So that's why the conclusion of suicide doesn't make sense to any of us that know my brother as well as we do.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs. And then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Zach's family is understandably frustrated. They've been bounced back and forth between law enforcement agencies, who seem to have reached the conclusion that his disappearance was a suicide. We too got transferred from agency to agency when we called to ask for an interview. We were never able to establish contact with anyone who claimed Zachary's case was in their jurisdiction. However, we did receive records from the Bonnie Lake Police Department. This is all very confusing, and Zach's case is certainly deserving of the time and effort devoted to finding any missing person, regardless of the circumstances. We wanted to put ourselves in the shoes of Zach's family and law enforcement to try to understand how the car ended up on the bridge over the Carbon River, and why Zach seemed to leave his home on his own free will, never to be seen or heard from again. So we went back to the beginning and learned everything we could about Zach's life. Zach's parents were young when he was born and eventually parted ways, but continued to parent Zach together and made sure he spent time with both sides of his family. Zach's mom, Nicole, told us about the early years of Zach's life.
I was only 16 years old when he was born. I was 15 when I got pregnant with him, I guess, and born when I was 16. His father was like 6 years older than I, and so I left soon after Zachary was born, and I lived with my parents, and my mom helped raise him while I finished school, high school, and she helped me raise him pretty much for the first few years of his life. Then his dad got married and became more involved, you know, kind of straightened stuff out and met somebody and got married and then started taking more of a role in Zachary's life. Let's see, I'd probably say when he was probably six, he probably started to see his dad more, that there was a, what do you call him, a guardian ad litem involved of, you know, custody of who he was going to live with. And I lived in an apartment with my boyfriend. His dad had just was newly married and had a house and that sort of thing. So they decided that his father would be the custodial parent. me and his father shared custody. He was granted the custodial parent, but he, you know, went 1 week with me, 1 week with his dad, back and forth like that.
Zach's sister Chloe told us how Zach was doing when he moved to his dad's house.
So we're about 8 years apart. I don't exactly remember about when he came to live with us. I believe he lived with his mom for a little while and then ended up coming and living with us. For the most part in childhood, I mean, him and I were the typical brother and sister. You know, we had our fights, but for the most part, we got along. He was really good under the care of my dad. You know, my dad had him doing typical stuff that any parent would have their child doing.
At some point, Zach decided that he wanted to go live with his grandmother, who relatives told us was always his favorite person to be around and spend time with. Chloe told us about how Zach's life changed when he went to go live with his grandmother.
He eventually wanted to go live with his grandmother, which is kind of when the downfall happened of basically, you know, he went from living with us and doing everything he should and supposed to basically he lived with his grandmother and, you know, he wasn't really doing schoolwork, wasn't really doing very good in school and stuff like that. And eventually he did end up dropping out, but he dropped out in the 11th grade and then eventually went and got his completion from there.
Zach's grandmother had raised him for much of his life, and he would continue to live with his grandmother well into adulthood. The two shared a close bond, and Zach cherished his relationship with his grandmother. Zach's mom, Nicole, shared with us how Zach came to live with his grandmother as a teenager and remained with her until her death.
So he ended up staying with my mother, and Zachary lived there with her until she passed away in 2016. Zach kind of went off the, not deep end, but he got extremely, extremely depressed when my mother passed. He actually went and stayed in the hospice house with her. She had like a 2-bedroom place at hospice.
Not all of Zach's relatives believed that this relationship with his grandmother was healthy, and some thought she was holding him back from growing into his own person and finding his way in life. This is what his Aunt Heidi told us about that relationship.
I love my nephew so much. When my mom had to go into the hospice house, one thing that they let her have him come live there with her, 5 or so months that she was there. And at first I was like really mad. I'm like, he needs to get his shit together, you know, and I would tell him all the time, like, Zach, you need to get your stuff together. What are you going to do when grandma dies? And we did a lot of, like, tried to do a lot of intervention for him when he was at the hospice house. Like, what are you going to do now? You know, Zachary, you got to, you know, be something. You got to do something. And he wanted to so bad. But even my mom, even when she was, like, dying, she would say, like, Heidi, you need to shut up. You can't. Don't say those things to him. That was really hard because I know that Zach wants more. And he was trying to get help. They just always kind of like held him back and made him kind of feel less than.
It wasn't just Zach's grandmother that seemed to be slowing his progress. Heidi told us that Zach exhibited symptoms of a mental health disorder.
Zach was so terrified of everything and had OCD so bad. The last couple of years, he's called me a lot, being depressed and just wanting to reach out, but wanting to do something different with his life. But like, can I just come live with you, Aunt Heidi? Can I be on your couch? But I've got 3 girls and he just is like, his behaviors would just drive me crazy. So I was always like, no, you can't, Zach. Or he would call me at 3 or 2 in the morning, you know, wanting to talk. I'm like, Zach, I was not awake at this time, you know? So things like that really sucked because I wanted to be there for him. And as much as possible, you know, we'd always start out like, okay, this time it's going to be different, you know, but it's hard to keep up with a kiddo that is just on different schedule and playing field, you know, and my mom has 3 teenagers, so it just was really hard, you know.
During Zach's teenage years, he started using marijuana and then narcotic painkillers. Heidi shared with us what she knows about how Zach got into doing drugs.
I don't know at what point he kind of got into drugs and doing bad things. So he went with his dad for a while, and then he came back to live with my mom and stepdad, and then he just started getting into drugs. He just started getting into trouble, and like my mom would tell us like little troubles that he would get into, but she'd always justify it or enable him, I guess, both. I never really knew exactly what was going on with him, but he just kept going down the slope of drugs and making bad choices. He fell off the roof at the elementary school and landed on his head. I know he was high as kite when he did that. I don't know what he was taking, but I know he did some sort of a lot of drugs.
During the time that Zach was using drugs, he was in a relationship with a young woman named Sabrina. The two of them used drugs together, and their relationship was often volatile. Zach's mom, Nicole, explained what she knows of their relationship.
I couldn't even tell you where they met, and neither one of them were in a good place at all. They were doing drugs. I don't even know like how it started on marijuana, probably, and then on to, eventually they ended up smoking pills and Percocet, and then probably even into heroin. I can't say for sure, but I would say probably 19, 20-ish, price part smoking marijuana. And it transpired into taking pills and then smoking pills. I want to say that they were smoking Percocets. I think they ended up that being too expensive and they ended up smoking heroin. I don't think he ever shot up. I think they were just smoking it.
Eventually, Zach and Sabrina had a baby together, though their lives were still unstable and they were continuing to struggle with drug use. Nicole told us more about this time.
And they were heavily using when Madison was born, so 23. He was pretty heavily into drugs. I can't say for sure, but they had Madison and they were leaving her with me, you know, overnight when she was brand new. I was just like, what, mom or dad, I guess, what leaves their newborn child overnight at less than a week old? I was just like, this is weird. But anyways, I was more than happy to do it. And, you know, they were both using pretty heavily. And I ended up, my mom was diagnosed with cancer and wasn't able to care for a newborn baby because that's where they both were living, was with my mom. And so they were out doing drugs and I was taking care of the baby most of the time. And I ended up getting third party custody of Madison and raising her for the first few years of her life. Zachary ended up getting sober.
Having Madison and not being able to care for her because of his drug use, in the custody orders of the courts only allowing supervised visitation, was a wake-up call for Zach. Nicole told us that Zach decided he was going to get clean and change his life.
Him and Sabrina split up. She ended up meeting somebody else and going off and doing her own thing. Zachary got sober, like completely sober, like I was saying, like he didn't like do anything. Wouldn't even take a sip of alcohol, nothing. After he got sober, he didn't go into any short treatment. He just literally detoxed in my mom's living room floor with just my mom just taking care of him. Madison was probably 3, so he had to been 26. That was a very profound thing for him. It was very, his sobriety was huge to him, but was in by no means able to take care of her by himself because he ended up doing a lot of neurological damage from doing drugs.
Zach's mom, Nicole, told us how the damage to Zach's brain and neurological system from years of drug abuse affected his daily life.
I mean, my mom had to take him to doctor appointment after doctor appointment and write documents and all kinds of stuff. It was to the point where he was able to receive Social Security. I mean, he, you know, to the point of him not being able to open pop cans, bottles, turn on a shower by himself. I think a lot of it in my head, I thought that it was more psychological than anything because I'm like, you have like the physical strength to do it. Like you can put your hand on a knob and turn it, but it was almost a fear of something happening. He said the fear of it, like when he does it, it sends like a shockwave through his body. That's how he explained it to me. He's like, when I do that, it triggers something and it goes up through his arm and explained to me like a shock. But it eventually got better. The neurological damage really affected his fine motor skills, like the ability to like grasp things and that sort of thing. But I felt like it got better because he was like even weird about like shifting, using the gear shifter in his car. He didn't drive for a long time. He couldn't put his car like into drive or into park. I remember one time him coming to my house, parking on my driveway, which was kind of a slope, but leaving his car in my driveway and drive, came inside and was like, hey, can you come to my car and park? I'm like, what? Your car's going to be in my garage or in the freaking road in about 2 seconds. I'm running out there.
Zach had been diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome after he stopped using drugs. Tourette's syndrome is a disorder involving the fine motor skills in the brain and often presents itself in the form of tics or uncontrolled movements. According to the National Institutes of Health, diagnosis of Tourette's in adulthood is fairly rare. However, there is an established correlation between substance misuse and Tourette's syndrome in adults. That may have been the explanation to the challenges Zachary encountered with daily tasks. Nicole gave us some insight to some of the other behaviors she saw in Zach.
To never leave the house, he had extreme OCD, like hygiene-wise. Hygiene was like huge to him, always having clean hands. And I wouldn't say it like when I went and cleaned out his room that he was renting, not like disgusting like dirty dishes, but he did have laundry about and just like pretty unorganized in that fashion, but not like dirty dishes or just disgusting stink funk, you know. It's just like laundry and just kind of just disorganization, but like shower wise and like just that, all that kind of personal hygiene type stuff was very over the top for him. He just almost had like a phobia of leaving the house, or when he would actually physically get in his car and leave, it would take him forever to leave the, he'd be at, like sitting there waiting for him. Like, he's like, oh, okay, I'm on my way. And like an hour later, you're like, I'm literally like 5 minutes away. Where are you? He's like, I'm just leaving the house. I just leaving the house. Like, it took him forever to get from the house to the car, get it started, and actually physically leave the house. Everything was, had to be like checked, double checked and triple checked, like everything, make sure he had everything. And like, yeah. And then for him to get out of his car was a whole nother thing, to make sure everything was shut off, everything was locked.
Zach was able to overcome the challenge of substance addiction and enter sobriety in a way that would be impossible for most. But he was motivated by his love for his daughter and wanted to be able to show the family courts that he could provide and care for her. However, Zach still had a long way to go, and the first step was finding stable housing. That alone seemed like an unattainable goal after his grandmother passed away. He had a close friend from school named Joey, and his mother Kim offered Zach a room to rent in her house. Kim told us about Zach moving to her home.
He went to school with my son, high school. So my son knew him from high school, and then they were friends throughout the years. Zach, he would be the same age, 32 now, and that's how I knew him. You know, he would be hanging around here. And at some point, he needed to find a place to live, and I was getting ready to rent my room because I needed the money, and I had an extra bedroom. And so he ended up by renting a room from us. He was here for 3.5 years.
I think most of the time he was okay living wherever he was, but basically people told him to hit the road. I mean, I charged him. Of course, he was living here renting a room, but you know, after his grandmother died, her husband, who was not his grandfather, basically kicked him out. And then he went live someplace for a while. He lived with his mom for a while. I think she got tired of it, you know, because he just slept on the couch or whatever. And then I think he lived with his sister, and then he lived with his dad. And the dad's other wife said, well, you know, enough of that. He bounced around because he was kind of kicked out. He rented rooms from, like when he came here, he was renting a room from some guy in town here. And I said, well, I have a room, you know, and I could use the money and stuff because I had lost my job. And so he ended up over here. But most of the time, I think he would be okay just sleeping on somebody's couch. He didn't have so high expectations or goals. So his parents were around, but I think at one point or another, you know, the parents basically told him, well, you need to find something else. You know, you're a grown up. And I could see that because he was a really sloppy person.
At a time when Zach needed the support of his family the most, every door seemed to be closed. Some had offered their homes and become frustrated with Zach. Others felt like he should have had his life together at his age and not be looking for a couch to sleep on. Some didn't have the space to accommodate him, and others just simply didn't want him there. We can't ask Zach how this affected him, but it must have hurt deeply and exacerbated the mental health obstacles he was already working to cope with. While Zach wasn't always the most neat and organized roommate, Kim shared with us that he was a good, kind-hearted person, but that his anxiety inhibited his ambitions to do something with his life.
He had a lot of anxiety, and I know he had depression, and he was pretty just really quiet, like on a low speed sort of, you know, as far as talking slow, and not that he was slow. I think he was very intelligent, but very introverted. I don't know that he was always like that, but he was when he was here. He was at Walmart for a while when he lived here, and he didn't like working the days because he had to deal with people. He wanted to work at night where he didn't have to deal with people. So that's how he was as far as definitely not social. He spent, I think, a lot of time by himself. He was pretty quiet, very kind of methodical, and thought things through when he would talk to you, and it would sometimes drive me crazy because I'm just like, spit it out. But he had a hard time just dealing with kind of himself, just taking care of himself. You know, he would have told you that he was the cleanest person around. He was a real germaphobe, would sleep a lot during the day. When he would work, he would get up right before work and just, you know, take off. Very forgetful. He had a hard time just kind of taking care of himself. He would just get real anxious about things. If he had to fill out a paper to go to a doctor, I'd have to help him. And one time when I wasn't here, when my son was here, I wasn't here, I was at my daughter's, and he was having a real anxiety attack. And my son called 911 and they came out. He had such a hard time making a decision about anything. Even if we'd go to Starbucks or something, he just couldn't decide. He couldn't grasp. It was just too much for him. So I guess they said, well, do you want us to take you in? And he couldn't make up his mind. And after quite a while, after they checked his vitals and everything, they just said, okay, we're going to make an executive decision. We're taking you in. And they took him in. I did see the papers that he got when he got out, the discharge papers. And the one thing it said for diagnosis, and I thought this was interesting, it said inability to deal with life issues. And this was a diagnosis I never even knew existed, but it kind of summed it up because he really did have a hard time dealing with any kind of decisions about anything to do with life, just daily life. It was just too much. They noticed it and they knew it. And once they checked him out, they basically sent him home after a few hours.
This was the type of thing that Zach struggled with in all aspects of his life. Zach's Aunt Heidi told us about a time that would have been a routine visit to a doctor for most of us, but was a significant obstacle for Zach.
I was going to go with him to get this genetic testing done. We have a cancer gene, and he wanted to get tested. I couldn't end up going with him, so he called me from the geneticist's office, and his appointment was at 3:30, and he called me at like 5, and he's like, Aunt Heidi, I'm just so worried that I might be missing something. I'm in here with the nurse and I'm still like just trying to fill out this paperwork. And I'm like, Zach, you've been in there with her for an hour and a half. He's like, yeah, but I feel like I'm missing something. And so we talked about what all he had. I'm like, that's it, buddy. You know, she's got everything. She's got grandma's genetic testing and you're good. You're okay. You can relax. And he just couldn't ever like, he's like, I always feel like I'm missing something or I'm not getting, I don't have it all down. You know, that was really hard for us to deal with him. Too, you know, and I know this is a sickness. I know it's an, you know, illness. I know I need to be there for him, but at some point I gotta work. I got my kids. And so it's hard.
Zach's family was understandably frustrated by the problems he faced that seemed easily avoidable. But these types of events seemed like red flags that Zach needed more help than he was getting. And the signs were being missed by many. Did he need residential treatment and therapy to work on improving self-function and managing living skills? Would a structured environment have provided a therapeutic outlet where he could grow and thrive? While it's easy to judge Zach for his inabilities, it's important not to overlook that the struggles he dealt with in daily life caused him to have limitations. Though he couldn't care for Madison full-time and struggled with self-care, Zach did take advantage of the supervised visitation allowed by the courts. At the time, he was living with Joey and his mom, Kim. And Kim told us about the times that Madison would come to their house, and how much Zach cherished his daughter.
She is 9, I believe. She would come over a lot, and I would supervise because she had to have somebody else. He can see her, but only if there's another adult around. And so that was me for a long time. So on Friday, she used to come over, and I would be here. And so he really cared a lot about her. And he talked about getting custody of her and then getting, you know, Section 8 housing, and they could go someplace. And I would tell him, well, you know, there's a lot to raise in a child. You know, you can't just, like, sleep in and not take him to school or something. And he'd, I know. And he was filling out paperwork with the courts for a long time. I was helping him with that kind of stuff. I would say he didn't have a lot of passion about anything, but he really cared about her. You know, he just wanted to see her, and she'd come over here and he'd buy games and stuff like that so they would play games, and then the aunt would come and pick her up at, you know, 5 o'clock or whatever. When I wasn't involved, they would meet at the park and the aunt would be there at a distance. There was always somebody there.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. When we talked with Zach's sister, Chloe, she told us how Zach's living situation with Kim and his friend Joey was a positive change for him and encouraged him to look for a job and start working.
So he lived with my parents for a little while after his grandmother passed, and then he ended up having to move out in about 2016, and he moved in to our grandparents' house on our dad's side and lived there for a little while. And then after a while, he had to end up moving out of there. And I believe that's about the time Kim, who is Joey's mom, said that Zachary could come stay with him. He was pretty messy living with us too. And my mom is much of a clean freak, so she couldn't really handle it anymore. Kim was perfectly fine with Zachary coming and living with her, as long as he paid rent and had a job, because that was the reason he ended up applying for Walmart, which was basically his first kind of real job that he had.
Zach didn't enjoy his job at Walmart and wanted to quit, but he was afraid of what his dad would say about him quitting. Chloe told us more about this.
My brother was very fearful of disappointing our dad, So when he wanted to quit working at Walmart because he was miserable there, he was very scared to do so because he was scared of disappointing our dad by quitting a job that he was miserable at. But I mean, growing up, our dad always told us both, if you're not happy somewhere, don't stay there. You know, do what makes you happy. So it was kind of odd that, I mean, I understand his perspective of being, you never want to disappoint your parents. But I mean, he even asked our dad if he could quit or if he should quit. You know, after he told our dad, you know, I'm miserable there. That's when basically our dad was told him, quit. You're miserable. Why stay there? You know, there's plenty of other jobs you could find that you'll be happy at.
Zach did end up quitting his job at Walmart and continued looking for jobs better suited for him. Zach eventually found a job that he loved, a place he felt welcomed and like he fit in. Here's Chloe again.
And that's when he started working at, it's called the BLT, it's the Bonnie Lake Tavern. It was in the city he lived in. I mean, he loved that job. He loved everybody there. He loved working there. He enjoyed it. He loved the atmosphere there. He felt very welcomed.
By this time, Zach had been sober and clean from all substances for years and hoped to move on with his life and prove to the courts that he could provide for his daughter. Zach's Aunt Heidi told us how Zach's last job at a local tavern came to an unfortunate end when he suffered a mysterious medical event.
He was at work and he was super hot and he would sit in the freezer. Like, he sat in the freezer for a while, went out and fell asleep in his car. And then, you know, the people at work were really nervous, so they called the manager and they're like, something with Zach, we're going to call, you know, the cops. And he's like, don't call the cops. Let me come in there and see what's going on. And it was just not like him to be so just deranged, you know. And it's like his pants were falling off. And then the cops came and the paramedics came and they were going to arrest him and take him to jail because he was super combative and delusional. And the manager just stuck up for him and was like, no, this is not, he's not who you're saying that he is right now, right? He's just having something. He's having a mental breakdown of some sort. So they got him to the hospital, into the ICU, because he crashed and he went unresponsive. His sodium tanked and his is just a mess. So he was like that for several days. And that was the first time like anything like that had happened. It was so scary. We didn't know if he was going to come out of it. So last year for Mother's Day, you know, he was in the hospital and he was like super combative at work and delusional. And they swore to God he was on drugs and they wouldn't even, he was in the ICU and they were like, you know, nobody does this unless they're on hardcore drugs. And we were like, drug test him. We want to know, you know, if he's not clean, we want to know because he swears to God that he is clean. And he was so combative and delusional. And they did a tox screen and he had no drugs in his system. And we felt, you know, validated and all of that because we were like, we know he's not, even though he presents like they wouldn't even basically help him because they're like, nope, he's on drugs. And then he started getting better. And then they're like, well, that's what we thought. So I wonder if that might have happened to him again. I'm just wondering if Zachary had another bout of that delusion and is out there somewhere, you know, still delusional.
Doctors never came to a conclusion about exactly what happened to Zach, but believed that he had some kind of incident where his body's sodium levels became dangerously low. According to the Mayo Clinic, low sodium levels can cause confusion, seizures, fatigue, and even coma along with other symptoms. While doctors were certain that there was an association to drug use, Zach's family told us that every test came back completely clean. In addition to obsessive compulsive behaviors and the Tourette's, Zach also struggled with anxiety, and after the medical event at his job that Heidi told us about, he didn't feel like he could go back to work there. His sister Chloe told us more.
That's where the severe anxiety came in because he didn't want to go back to a job where, you know, he did, because he didn't remember anything he did because with how low his sodium was, it affected his brain and his memory. And so he had no idea what he did until we told him. And when we told him, you know, his anxiety kicked in and he got really embarrassed. And he's like, I have to quit that job because if I go back, they're going to remember that. They're going to look at me different. I'm going to feel like they're staring at me all the time, you know, talking about what I did. And so that's why he quit. You know, the manager there, I think the owner actually told him, you know, you're still welcome here. I mean, he even visited my brother in the hospital, but my brother was just too anxious about it. He couldn't. He's like, I can't go back. It's too much. I'll have anxiety the whole time. Yeah, he kind of just, he was a big homebody, stayed at home, kind of slept a lot and played video games. After the hospital instance, he just spent his free time sleeping and playing video games.
The mental health and medical struggles that Zach faced would be more than enough for anyone to deal with. But Zach was also coping with something else. He had been dating a woman named Carrie for a few years, and she had recently broken up with him, which was devastating to Zach. Nicole told us about that relationship.
He ended up meeting a gal, Carrie, that he dated for a couple of years, but that seemed to bring him out of his funk. He was the happiest I had seen him in quite some time when he met her. He was completely sober, never, you know, didn't smoke marijuana, didn't drink alcohol, didn't smoke cigarettes, nothing. His vice was a vape. He was, you know, really happy, and he has a 9-year-old daughter that was his everything. What he kept him going pretty much after my mom passed was his little girl. And then me and this girl, Carrie, just brought out, you know, the happiness in him after my mom passed as well. So, and then they ended up breaking up. I don't know if he actually cheated on her. Well, he said that he cheated on her, but didn't cheat on her. Like didn't actually go through with like the physical act of having a sexual relationship, but was talking to another girl or something. And that just tore him and Carrie apart and kind of spiraled downward after that. Extremely depressed, slept all day long. He was up all night and slept all day.
Carrie and Zach had broken up many months before he disappeared, but he continued to battle with the depression he felt from the loss of that relationship. His roommate Kim told us that in the time immediately prior to his disappearance, Zach seemed to be struggling.
I assume he was depressed, and I think his sister or somebody told me that he had called her and was crying about it. I think he was depressed. Well, he was already depressed anyway, but things were going pretty good with Carrie. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure he was depressed. But again, it was hard to tell with him. He just kind of always had this face that didn't really show much.
It's been a year since Zach disappeared. And when we started working on this story last year, we quickly learned that so many people love and care about Zach and want to see a resolution to his sudden disappearance. His sister Devin told us this.
He's the kind of person that would laugh at himself just to make other people laugh, you know? And super smart. Like, you wouldn't even, I think that you would look at him and you probably wouldn't think that he would have as much knowledge about just like random facts of life as he does. Like, he could tell you something and you would be like, why the hell do you even know that? He's just goofy. Like, we used to have certain songs that we would just quote back and forth to each other and stuff like that. He really loved his daughter. I think that was a big part of everything to him. A lot of the stuff we talked about all the time was about his daughter and his love for her, stuff like that. I never really saw him sad, you know, like minimal times had I ever seen him cry or be angry or anything like that, unless it was something to do with like his family or his daughter or something like that, you know. He was just bright. Like, he was just, he couldn't not be happy. At that point when he had gone missing, he was really just working on getting custody of his daughter back. He was on disability, so I think he just wanted to have his daughter and to have a family and like a house and to be happy, you know. I think he just wanted a good life.
We think Zach wanted to have a good life too. We spoke briefly with his ex-girlfriend Sabrina, who told us that she is currently working on getting her own life together and feels a lot of guilt about missing out on their daughter's life. Is this also what Zach was feeling, but just couldn't seem to overcome in order to provide for her? Sabrina also told us that Zach had been to the Fairfax Bridge when they were younger. She knew this because she had been there with him, and that it's a popular destination for sightseers, hikers, and others who want to spend time in nature. Zach had many successes in life, though it's possible he and those in his life never saw them. He conquered a powerful addiction to drugs that millions of people are never able to accomplish. He found work, and when that job didn't work out, he had the perseverance to keep trying until he found a job that he loved. When the doors on places to live kept closing on Zach, He slept in his car until he found a place he could live. He was working on filing paperwork with the family courts to loosen some of the restrictions he had on seeing his daughter, and he never stopped trying to get better. This isn't a story about someone who failed at life. It's about someone who never stopped trying. And while we don't know what happened to Zach on February 9th, 2020, we hope that he didn't succumb to the things that plagued him. We know that he didn't take some important things like his wallet and dentures, but he did take his vape and phone. Both of those items are still missing to this day. There was a witness who reported seeing Zach on the bridge that day and told him to jump, which was an absolutely terrible thing to say. The witness said that later he felt guilty for doing that and returned and apologized to Zach. We don't know what was going through Zach's mind that day. Was he contemplating ending his life? Did he drive out there to visit a beautiful place he used to go to with friends when he was younger? Or could it have been something else, like he planned to meet someone, or became disoriented like the incident that happened at work? One thing we do know is that the police believe that this is a case of suicide, but Zach's family strongly disagrees. And Zach's disappearance remains a tragic puzzle with few clues a year after he disappeared. At the time of his disappearance, Zach was 31 years old. Zach's first name is Michael, and he may go by the name Mikey. He has blonde hair and blue eyes. Zach is approximately 5'10" tall and weighed around 160 pounds at the time of his disappearance. He left home without his dentures and may have been wearing slippers. He has several tattoos. If you have any information about Zach's disappearance, you're asked to call the Bonnie Lake Police Department at 253-863-2218. If you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of self-harm, there are resources out there. You can contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline 24 hours a day at 1-800-273-8255 or visit suicidepreventionlifeline.org. There is a national helpline for mental health that provides information and treatment referrals at 1-800-662-HELP.
Zach and I were super close. I always got him as much as I could, and we were really, really good buddies. You know, and I was like 18, I think, when he had him, or 17, something like that. And then in my 20s, I moved to San Francisco. He would come and see me. And then when I lived in Portland, he would come see me. He's just a nice kid. Always felt very apprehensive about everything. Very scared to do anything, always. Kind of got teased a lot. But he was a fun kiddo. I guess I feel like he could have gone delusional again somehow. And didn't even know he was there. But I don't know how he would have got there. I don't know if he drove himself there. I just can't imagine him driving himself there, you know? Did he get pushed? What the hell was it? What was he doing out there? Like, why would Zachary go out there? He's scared of everything. Like, literally scared of everything. Why would he jump? Why would he go out there? And to leave his daughter. He loved his daughter so much. And in his way, like, as slow and as difficult as everything was for him, he was still fighting for her and trying to be a dad.
That brings us to the end of episode 268. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Massachusetts. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.